I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Welcome, everybody. It's the Maggie Dawn Show, coming to you every Monday through Friday from WAUK 540 AM across southeastern Wisconsin, but of course available statewide with your local Civic Media Talk Radio affiliate, and of course on the app, which you can get for free wherever you find your apps. Check that out. It is a really fun way to interact with the show and make sure you can catch every minute of our talk radio lineup. My name is Maggie Dawn. And again, welcome. It is Wednesday. It is hump day. And I'm really excited to be joined for the second week in a row by my colleague, Gray Gunderson, who's coming to us up there from Park Falls. Hello, Gray. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. It's nice to have you.
Good afternoon, Maggie. Thanks for having me again.
We're going to start out with some not politics, because between the extortion of one of our allies and apparently... You know, it's hard to fight Russia without any U.S. military support. Yes, Ukraine agreeing to the extortion that Donald Trump has now done for the second time in as many presidential terms, agreeing to turn over their mineral rights. House Republicans voting for a $4.5 trillion tax cut for billionaires, 100 millionaires, and huge companies like Amazon. You know, amongst all that really good news, oh, by the way, that $4.2 to $5 trillion in tax cuts for rich people who don't need tax cuts, yeah, that's probably going to come at the cost of your Medicaid, Medicare, or Social Security, and your veterans' benefits, if I'm talking to any veterans out there. For the time being, Gray, let's just set all of that aside, because, whew, that is a dark, dark abyss I'm looking into there. I thought you and I could get together, hopefully on a weekly basis. We're going to call it in your neck of the woods. Because, you know, much as I might delude myself that Milwaukee might be the center of the universe, it is not. And there are so many great things going on across our beautiful state of Wisconsin. You're an outdoor fanatic. I'm an outdoor fanatic. And I thought, hey, let's talk with Gray every week, see what's going up again, going on up in your neck of the woods. So again, with heartfelt thanks, Gray, thanks for coming back on the show. We've got some fun things to talk about. You went to Hayward, you saw the Birkebeiner and the finish. We were talking about this last week. So tell us all, how was it? How did the Berkey turn out? Was it as enthusiastic as we always expect?
It was. It absolutely was. There was a level of enthusiasm in the air that tangible is a fair word. Briefly, just thank you so much for having me back on the show this week and for organizing a regular segment. I can't wait to pop back up once in a while and talk about our great state of Wisconsin. I'll be checking in with areas all over the state, hopefully with help from other people in the Civic Media Network. And that's going to be a good old fashioned darn good time. But that said, I did, in fact, get to be up close and personal with the Berkey this past Saturday. And I'm afraid that my ignorance regarding the finer mechanics of cross-country skiing will be on display yet again, but please don't judge too harshly. The people will do that at home. That said, we had to navigate the city of Hayward mid Birkebeiner, which there's actually events happening all the way from Wednesday through to Sunday, technically, but frankly, Sunday, that town is a ghost town where there were 15,000 people just milling about shoulder to shoulder the day before. And actually, what happens, if you're not familiar with Hayward, it has a one-way street that is most of the town. A lot of these towns, the joke is blink and you'll miss it. Well, in Hayward, it's Main Street, which is one way, headed one particular direction. Most of the businesses, all the tourist-based shops are there. That is where the finish line is. So it's blocked off on both sides. People can't just cross it willy-nilly as they normally would with crosswalks. You've got to head all the way to one end or the other where they've put up special footbridges. So we had to go around the finish area of the Berkey. I was up close and personal listening to people discuss the number of Birkebeiners they've completed as though they were trading cards. You know, back in the day, you've got your Pokemon cards, I've got your this, you trade me that. They were talking about, I've got 15 Cordalopits and 7 Birkebeiners now. And those numbers back and forth, come to find out that if you do 20 Birkebeiners, Maggie, you actually get to wear a special purple bib. So like you can actually just look out and see, yeah, those are the VIPs.
The OGs, yes,
exactly. And if you do, I believe it's 25 or is it 30? We were just talking to somebody who's a master of the sport earlier this morning on WCQM, you get a purple bib with a gold border. Beyond that, the echelons, the uppermost echelons don't even exist yet because most people don't have more than 30. That's a good kind of retirement point. You get 30 Berkeys in.
I mean, 30 Burgerbeiners. It's time to hang up those skis, folks. It's only been going on for 51 years. That is, assuming you start doing this, what, in your 20s, maybe?
A lot of people do it in their teens, actually, especially if they're from around here and you don't have to travel far. And if you have your parents doing it before you, which many people do, there's kind of a annual pilgrimage to Hayward is a very frequent thing for a lot of people, or a very common thing for a lot of people across the country, and not just across the country, because Hayward is part of a system of courses across the world, which qualifies a person to be what's called a Loppet Master. There are basically 20 across the world. There's Swiss courses and Italian and German courses, and you've got to hit 10 of these 20 global courses to be the master. That, and we spoke to one of them this morning. So people are coming in, and they're coming into Hayward, their one visit to America, maybe in their whole life, to race a Berkey in Hayward, get that stamp, and maybe never come back to the States again. But they did it because it's often regarded as one of the more challenging ones of those 20, which it's hard to imagine something that cool is just up in the dusty old Northwoods, but it's there, and it's the only one in the country, is in Hayward, Wisconsin.
A source of great Wisconsin pride. I love it. Again, my exposure, I've never raced it myself because that's a little bit beyond my now middle-aged athletic prowess. But a couple of good friends of mine have attended. A dear friend of mine raced it maybe about, this was, I think, in 2019, right before COVID. And I had a good friend growing up whose dad did it, much to the chagrin of his bloodied toes after that long race. Well, thank you so much, Gray, for this amazing update on the Burgerbeiner. So the purple gold outlined bibs is the way to go. Perhaps a wee bit of an analogy to the newly introduced Trump's gold card, which is going to apparently replace green cards for the really desirable people that we want to come here.
But with a $5 million price tag. I'll admit, Maggie, around here, the purple and gold is more like to draw a comparison to a certain potent potable bag, the royal, actually crowns become relevant again all of a sudden, but maybe where they shouldn't be.
A crown royal bag is good for so many things though, Gray. I mean, you can put dominoes in there. You can put a deck of cards and tiddlywinks, whatever might be your thing. I use a number of gold crown bags for various camping supplies when I go because I have different colors of the crown royal bags. I also believe I have, what is the game, the board game where you're like, Rummy Cube. I keep my Rummy Cube set.
Nice.
Of Rummy Cubes in a Crown Royal
Crown
bag.
Crown Royal packaging is better than a lot of boxes and blister packs you get for a lot of products. I will absolutely stand behind that. When I was a bartender, I was the guy hoarding Crown Royal bags. They're probably still in a drawer somewhere, like that bag of grocery bags, but just more purple, more felt, you know, a little fancier, seeming fancier. Is it really fancier, though?
Is it really fancier? We'll go with yes. Speaking of potent potables, I read an article in a national national website today extolling the virtues of one of Milwaukee's oldest bars. Speaking of collecting items related to potent potables, Gray, and that is Walski's. National website and tons of posts about the article today talking about Walski's, the history of Walski's, and specifically the much sought after I Closed Walski's bumper sticker, which has been infamous or famous perhaps for decades, since the 70s when it first came on scene. I guarantee you, Gray, you've seen one of these. White field with just blue block letters that say, I Closed Walski's. I know when I was traveling abroad, I brought a small pack of the I Closed Walski's bumper stickers with me to share the joy of one of Milwaukee's oldest bars, wherever I may have been in my international travels. I also wanted to talk to you, Gray, about one of our other civic media colleagues, WCQM morning host Joel Karnack. Speaking of really fun semi-professional hobbies, apparently Mr. Karnack is a semi-professional cornhole player. Tell me more, Gray.
So he, it might be fair to say he's kind of semi-retired because it was his son, Blake, who was a little more actually professionally involved. Blake Carnick, a name quite highly regarded in the cornhole world. Of course, there's a lot of names for the game, bags, boards. It's tossing bags at the boards with the hole in them, scoring points by sinking them through the board, of course, if people aren't familiar. But no, our very own morning show host, he's live 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. But on the weekends, you might catch him in a loose-fitting kind of neoprene jersey like you'll see people throwing darts in or playing billiards. It's that class of athletics and sports that it's unique. You know, it's not quite at bowling, but it is above darts, I would say. And I don't mean above in any positive or negative connotation, but
no, it's not pejorative. You wear the same kind of uniform for all this. So one of the interesting things about the word cornhole, when I lived in Indiana, I lived in Lafayette, Indiana, not West Lafayette, where the university known as Purdue resides. In Lafayette, Indiana, the term cornhole in Indiana did not refer to what I call being a Milwaukee in bags. It referred to, I think we were, they also call it washers down there, where you're throwing washers at a metal can that you used to buy coffee grounds in that existed in a wooden board sort of setup. So it was interesting. Again, I love Midwestern changing vernacular from state to state. Yes, cornhole generally, at least if I'm remembering correctly, when I was in Indiana, was actually washers. And they also called what we sometimes call cornhole bags. What's your skill level at bags, Gray? I'm curious.
I think I have talent, but I haven't cultivated it at all, Maggie. I find that I get more success than I expect, but I still can't compete with the best of them. I'm no Joel Karnick. That much is sure.
Well, no one really is. Hats off to you, Joel Karnick. I love a semi-professional cornhole player. My personal experience, Gray, is that if I have two adult beverages, my skills at these variety of leisure sports activities, darts, pool, cornhole and the like goes up quite a bit, but that's it. Two adult beverages, then anything more than that, the skill level starts plummeting and fast.
I can immediately tell you know what we're talking about, though. You got the feel down. I can tell.
Yes, not my first rodeo. Folks, we're listening to our new installment of Your Neck of the Woods with my good friend Greg Gunderson. Keep it locked right here. We'll be right back. We're going to mix in a little leisure and politics next. You're not going to want to miss it. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. There, what's going on in your neck of the woods? We're hearing just that kind of news from my good friend Gray Gunderson coming to you all with me here on the Maggie Dawn Show from WCQM Park Falls. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're gonna do this segment every Wednesday because we all need a break. It's middle of the week. Gotta power through to the weekend. It is going to be a little mix of news from across the state, a little leisure activity. Gray and I both like to enjoy the beautiful outdoors, the amazing natural resources that we have here in the state of Wisconsin. And there will be, from time to time, a wee bit of politics sprinkled in here. So welcome, everyone, and welcome again to Gray. If you would like to join our discussion this afternoon, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. And don't forget, folks, we're coming up on Friday. That means we've got another segment of Ask Maggie that we're aiming and gearing up for 3 p.m. on Fridays. If you've got a question for me, basically about gosh darn near anything, you can email that question to askmaggie@civicmedia.com. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. Am I getting that right? I think I'm getting that right now. It is askmaggie@civicmedia.us, and we will add your question to the queue of questions we've got going for this Friday. Love to hear from each and every one of you. We're going to talk a mix of leisure and politics because the gods gifted us such a story, Gray. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and other outlets across the state reporting that folks in the North Woods, specifically surrounding the Apostle Islands, the biggest of which Madeline Island, which almost everybody's heard of, that the local tourism boards from that region of the state are extremely worried that the Apostle Islands National Park, the National Apostle Islands Lakeshore Park, very famous for the ice caves, though not open, I don't think, this year because it's not safe, which generates some $55.7 million for the economy up in that sort of directly north area of the state, is in jeopardy for this coming camping season and tourist season because of the drastic cuts that Donald Trump is making to the National Park Service. What are you hearing from your neck of the woods, Gray? And let's talk a little bit about what a jewel the Apostle Islands are for the state of Wisconsin.
We're gonna have to find a rhythm with that phrase because the temptation's there to just use it all the time. I know I've tried not to say it three or five times myself today, but up here,
guilty.
Give it time. I will fall. I will stumble and fall. But that said, right now we're still a little bit isolated from the immediate effects of this kind of decision, Maggie, because we don't. That's just it. Is that this kind of thing is unprecedented? Staffing levels have been low. And tourism has been trending upwards, so there has been increased need, but not so much that there's a major disparity. You know, it's not a topic of popular conversation up here. Hey, we need more people in uniform. In fact, as people can imagine, not law enforcement in general. Law enforcement, of course, the tone of respect for law enforcement here carries through, though with a special asterisk when it comes to the folks in green jeans, federal employees who are enforcing wildlife regulations especially. So I would imagine, and I would have to imagine, because I haven't heard the discussions yet, that you'd get kind of a mixed bag of opinions. Some folks who know that this may mean, if nothing else, a little more litter and less human beings capable of being scheduled to come out and pick that up. You know, there may be small effects like that, but honestly, it's tough to guess because it's all guessing. We have continued to see a trend upward in tourism, and tourism we rely on more and more as industry leaves the Northwoods areas. Right. But we have not seen an imbalance of staffing levels that we will see this coming season. We just don't know. I think that's the best answer. As with always, when that is the answer, it's the best answer by far. We don't know. We haven't seen this kind of drop before.
This is from Mary Motif, Bayfield County's tourism director and president of the Friends of the Northern Great Lakes Visitors Center, saying that this particular National Lakeshore Park, the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore Park, quote, won't shut down completely, but it's going to be really challenging. The Apostle Islands and that particular national park being one of three, if I am correct, National Lakeshore Park, all on the Great Lakes, that are managed by both the National Park Service and also the Department of the Interior. Specifically, earlier this month, 1,000 National Park Service employees across the country were laid off. Though I know that they tend to hire thousands of seasonal workers, which just makes sense. From my Milwaukee County experience, we did that every season in the county parks. You know, given how essential tourism is to the Bayfield area, right? It's you really hope that they're not going to have to reduce camping availability, that people wouldn't be turned off by, you know, what you were saying, not being able to address the pit toilets timely. I mean, as a camper, you don't want those to go too many days without treatment and getting addressed, the overall litter, wear and tear on the park itself. I love the Apostle Islands. I have camped up there as a child with my folks. We also have an amazing state park, of course, Big Bay State Park up in the Apostle Islands area in Bayfield as well. So again, it's such a crown jewel for Wisconsin and draws so many people up to that area of the state. It is definitely something to keep an eye on. You are a bit of a fisherman, and you've got a favorite fishing spot up there, do you not, Gray?
I do. It's I'm committing a cardinal sin right now, Maggie. It's called burning your spot. You don't tell people where you fish. That's just a bad idea, and you don't need to explain why. But
you should be vague. Don't give them the exact lat lawn, right?
Well, everybody who knows me, who's watching this, will know exactly where to find me all summer once I say this. There is a historic location, an old dam, nestled into the heart of the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest, just happens to be down the road from where I call home and where I was born and raised, where I still live today. And I don't know how it's going to be affected. That terrifies me. It's been exactly as it's been for 30 years. The toilets, the litter, those are the least, the smallest, the meanest of nuanced ways that they maintain the integrity of the park and preserve it so that people like my kids, you know, like, yes. It's not for me. I'm not worried about me. I'll probably still get to fish there for the rest of my life. But can my kids stay the same? Yeah, yes. I'm terrified for that. That's not fair. I mean, and now I'm complaining, but that's not fair.
Greg Gunderson from WCQM, thanks so much. We'll be back in just a moment with a very special guest talking about the SAVE Act's impact on married women. Do you know a married lady? My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. What's up, everybody? My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy hump day, everybody. I've got a really special guest with us, coming to us from Washington, D.C., talking to us about the SAVE Act, which has this really the acronym sounds good, the SAVE Act, and it stands for Safeguard American Voter Eligibility. I love it when legislation has these really appealing-sounding names. This gentleman's name, my next guest, his name is Brian Lamack. He's the executive director of an organization called Defend the Vote. Here with me today to explain potentially millions of people being disenfranchised, losing the ability to vote because of this innocuous sounding SAVE Act, specifically including tens of millions of married women. Do you know any married women if you're listening? You might know one or two. Did those married women change their names after they got married? Yeah, it might be a big problem for them to continue to be able to vote under the SAVE Act. Welcome to the show, Brian. Really appreciate you making time.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Tell us what the SAVE Act is all about.
You know, the simplest way to say it is it's a massive voter suppression bill, right? So the SAVE Act will make it harder for all Americans to vote. It's going to prevent tens of millions, as you mentioned, eligible American citizens from voting, and it's going to cost taxpayers billions of dollars. So just a quick rundown. There are unnecessary burdens put on the voters to verify their citizenship when registering. That's kind of like the overlay of this. That's the big problem. And what that means is the driver's license that you would typically use to register to vote. You go to your voting center, you use your driver's license. I am Brian Lemick. I live in this particular address. It's not enough anymore. Now you need a passport or a certified birth certificate, and you have to present it in person. Now, 21 million Americans don't have the aggregated materials, right? Never mind the 146 million Americans that don't have a passport. So the story that I've been telling is, I think about my stepmother, right? So she was born, she's one of seven, youngest of seven girls. Now, her parents, not that they didn't lack imagination, right? But after 2 days and six daughters already, they didn't quite have a name for her yet. So she leaves the hospital as baby girl Sabella. That is her name on her birth certificate. And that has been nothing but difficult for her the rest of her life. So she figures it out. She gets her driver's license, figures out the name, all this stuff. Marries my father. So now her birth certificate is baby girl Sabella. Her license says Gail Lemick. She's never left the country. Maggie, like a lot of Americans, she doesn't have a passport. So she doesn't have a passport. Her license doesn't match a birth certificate, and she can't prove her citizenship. So this person who is 70 years old, who's voted in every election since she was 18, who just recently moved, which is why it really matters, because she has to re-register, she, under this law, can vote. And she and tens of million other Americans are going to face the same issue. Now, think about this, too. Like, again, in Wisconsin, just like everywhere across the world, like, not everybody is traveling. And there is a shocking number of Americans that don't have passports, right? So 146 million don't. Now, it's $130 per passport. $19 billion to register and get these passports and get the necessary documentation. Now, Wisconsin specific, 5 million people don't have a passport. That would cost $650 million for Wisconsin folks from Wisconsin to get the necessary documentation, right? Now, again, this is re-registering. So this is if you move, you change your name, you switch your parties. I can move across the street. I got to go through the whole damn process again. So who's at risk here? The military, Native Americans, because tribal IDs don't work, right? Black voters, rural voters, low-income voters, right? I moved when I was a kid. I moved 11 times. My mom could have given a damn about getting her passport because she's worried about gas in the tank, oil in the tank in our home. She's worried about food on the table. So if you have to prioritize your vote versus those essentials, which everybody needs to have, right? You're disenfranchising the vast number of people in the population that actually need to vote. They need their voices heard, Maggie.
Yeah, Brian, this is the thing that I think is most insidious about this, is that it has the veneer of neutrality, right? And this is the typical game plan, battle approach of the new MAGA movement, which is that it will have a veneer of reasonableness, it will have a veneer of neutrality. But the reality is, and again, I talk on the show all the time about, hey, how do you know an elected official is actually decent at their job? Look at the actual impact of the legislation that they champion and introduce and support. And here, again, all Republicans are worried about is giving the veneer of reasonableness and the veneer of neutrality, when every single one of them, including the people that have introduced this bill, know damn well that the people who will not be able to vote will be overwhelmingly veterans, women, right? Poor people, because frankly, even if you can afford to get a passport, that is a months long process unless you're able to, frankly, stop what you're doing, drive down to a federal office, expend the additional hundreds of dollars to expedite getting a passport. Otherwise, you can't vote. I want people to be so clear. And please, Brian, correct me if I get this wrong. If you do not have a passport, and you are a married woman who changed your name and your name on, that is, if you even have a birth certificate at home, first of all, bravo, I have no idea where mine is. But even if you have a passport at home and you have voted in every single election, if this is enacted, your birth certificate isn't enough. It looks to me, under my read of the legislation, that the only document that would work for a person in that circumstance is a passport,
right?
Which means unless you planned a year ahead, you're not going to be able to vote. And that is exactly the point. Let's be clear. This is about making it more likely than not that white, wealthy men are dominating our voting ranks in the next election cycle. Am I overstating the seriousness of the potential impact here, Brian?
No, absolutely not. In fact, you nailed it. I mean, this is, again, voter suppression at its finest. And what are we doing, Maggie? We are taking away the votes of those everyday Americans that need to be heard. Why? So that wealthy white billionaire corporations can placate, right? Their base can placate their shareholders so profits can be made. Why do they care about the rest of Americans? You know, why would they? Because their goal is to make money. Their goal is to preserve wealth. And so that's what they're doing. And they will be damned with everybody else. So,
well, that's if you understand who is going to be disenfranchised, then the question that I always want to ask is, to what goal? And I think, Brian, your articulation of the goal here is incredibly important. You want to suppress the voice of women and working people in this country, as well as Black and brown people. That's what it, and military vets, right? Native Americans. It is about suppressing those voices. Why would conservatives want to suppress the voices of Black and brown people, women, Native Americans, veterans? You know, go figure it out. That's not their target market. Well, why is that not their target market? You look at who controls the vast swaths of wealth, et cetera, which brings me back to my fundamental point. If someone wants to stand up and tell me, hey, I am all about improving our democratic process, I want to make sure it is a secure democratic process, and you want me to believe you, then what I should see from you are actions and legislation that are making it easier for regular people to vote, especially working class Americans and poor folks. We need to hear more from working class Americans, less from billionaire overlords. They already have a voice. It's called political donations, which they do at, you know, to the scale of billions of dollars. And this is doing right. They're doing exactly the opposite of this. I also would challenge any Republican that's putting their name on this. Oh, you're about election security? Then explain to me why the guy that leads your party is defunding the very organization in our federal government, the cybersecurity infrastructure, excuse me, the cyber, what, I'm going to forget the acronym, CISA. It's the Cybersecurity Infrastructure something agency. It's the folks that actually make sure foreign governments aren't hacking into our election systems. He's defunding that agency and firing people by the hundreds. And, so don't tell me it's about election security.
But and even to go one more on top of that, Maggie, he's threatening right now to take over the FEC.
Yes.
So he wants to put out an executive order based on this fringe little legal theory that he has that claims the White House has the power over independent agencies. So that really would put him in control, and he would be the top cop, or in control of the top cop, maintaining power ahead of the 2026 election. So this is posturing. This is setting themselves up now for what many of us that work in especially House politics, believe could be an opportunity to take back the House. They are posturing right now to prevent from doing that. And it makes me think about, and it makes me think, because two things, and something you said at the beginning, Maggie, which I really liked, is this veneer, right? Yes. You're right, that's what they do. And there are Republicans in Wisconsin, House members in Wisconsin, that use this language also, which is they talk about this as a bill to ensure that non-Americans can't vote. Well, look, we got some really good rules already and laws that ensure that, okay? So that's not what this is.
And Brian, that point deserves an incredible amount of emphasis, right? And by the way, the guy's name is Tom Tiffany. He's a Wisconsin congressman. He's one of the co-sponsors. Down with Tom Tiffany. You're about voter suppression and billionaire overlords. Shame on you, sir. By the way, the phrase "there is fake as a set of Hollywood veneers" keeps popping into my head here. The idea that, again, any of this has to do with election security is just false. Brian, my statistics are telling me that 1.3 million women in Wisconsin do not have birth certificates. Can you go through the stats on the cost and the numbers of people in Wisconsin?
Yes, I can. Hang on 1 second. My mic was acting up. So just thinking about Wisconsin itself and how it's going to hurt the families, just one piece here. These voting restrictions are going to hurt Wisconsin families because these disenfranchised voters, they're going to lose their ability to shape policies. This is just going back to the point we made before, because I think it's such a home run. And also, let's not sleep on what's happening in Wisconsin 3 either, Maggie. Right? Derek Van Orden is as responsible. He will vote for this. He is as responsible for taking away American votes as anyone else in Wisconsin, any other House members in Wisconsin. But we're thinking about the impact here on affordable housing. We're thinking about the impact in grocery prices, healthcare, and wages. This is wheelhouse for all Americans, Wisconsinites, everybody. This is something that we're focusing on, going back to my mom when I was a kid, moving all the time, right? Meanwhile, again, these wealthy donors, we just have to nail this point home, they're getting more influence over the policies. So you absolutely nailed it, right? You absolutely nailed it. So just thinking now about, all right, marriage certificates and things like that, other issues and the impact that it's going to have on Wisconsin, you know, we have to imagine that, again, 1.3 million women in Wisconsin, 1.3 million women in Wisconsin, 69 million nationwide lack birth certificates that match their names. Match their names. Overlay that with the 45 million, or forgive me, however many million do not have their passports, 21 million don't have their passports, you're losing a tremendous amount, right? And we are going to see the women vote will impact these elections. So they're suppressing that vote, poof, right away. The Native American vote, again, there is a very large Native American population in Wisconsin. We all know that. Making it very difficult, already difficult for them to vote, making it even more difficult for them to vote, right? Stripping away, Maggie, the 501c4 efforts that occur to get registration to vote, stripping away the mail efforts that occur to strip, right? Absolutely impossible. Where'd I go?
Yeah, that is Brian Lemick from Defend the Vote. We'll be right back with the Maggie Don Show on the Civic Media Network. Don't go away.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got an extremely important guest that you all need to hear from this half hour. His name is Brian Lemick. He's the executive director of Defend the Vote, coming to me live from Washington, D.C. Welcome back to the show, Brian, and thanks so much for sticking around. We are talking about the SAVE Act. Again, one of these reasonable sounding, hey, we should probably do that pieces of legislation that is but a Hollywood-style set of veneers covering up its pernicious actual purpose to disenfranchise tens of millions of Americans. If you do not have a passport, and what is it, 100 and how many million Americans don't have passports, Brian?
146 million, Maggie.
146 million Americans don't have passports. That means you'd have to show a birth certificate. Well, if you happen to be married, or you had any name change because, you know, you got married or you got divorced and then you changed it back or didn't change it back or you got married more than once, you're going to have to show something else. You're going to have to pay to get a passport. And if you can't do that and you don't know about it until the day you go to vote, you're not going to be able to vote. All of this, ostensibly, according to Congressman Tom Tiffany here in Wisconsin, who is a co-sponsor of this federal legislation, is supposedly about keeping the 10 to guesstimated 12 to 13 million people in the United States who are here illegally from voting. But Brian, the math just isn't mathing. Let's just assume for argument's sake that it is 13 million people here that are here illegally. But if you're going to disenfranchise 69 million people in the United States, or even the 1.3 million women in Wisconsin who do not have birth certificates that match their current legal name, what is the, where's the net positive? Where's the government efficiency, I might ask?
And it begs the question here, Maggie, too, is why do these non-citizens want to go vote? What incentive do they have? They're facing deportation. There's, again, a lot of really good rules and a lot of really good laws and a lot of steps in the process already to prevent this, right? This is for voter registration. So if you're already registered, you haven't moved, you're fine. But if so, you're here illegally, you're going to register to vote, which already flags you. They check before you get there. Then you're going to roll into the voter station, and you're going to show your documentation, your license that you have, perhaps, and then they're going to catch you there. You will get deported. So you worked so hard to get in this country. You're doing whatever. You're raising your family. You're doing what's right for your family here in America, and you're going to take that risk. It's an insane prospect, right?
Well,
so
And here's the thing. You touched on the fact that there are numerous, what I'm going to call back-end verification processes. So even to become registered, states have incredibly aggressive systems to verify citizenship when you first try to get registered. And that is not often what's happening when someone walks into a polling place to register, but it is happening on the back end. This poses an incredible amount of risk. In other words, on the back end, Wisconsin, if you use a driver's license or a state-issued ID to register to vote, the state of Wisconsin shares that information with the U.S. Department of State, as well as the Social Security Administration. They have to verify that you are born here or have become a naturalized citizen, that you've been issued a Social Security. All of that's happening. If a regular person who is here illegally, yes, I'm going to risk deportation so that I can cast my one vote. The lines from the yes, Democrats want a bunch of people who are not citizens. No, we don't. I'll say that I'm a Democrat. No, please don't vote. No, that is not helpful because it sets up this kind of baloney. It's entirely contrary to what I have heard Democrats say for decades, which is we want safer, easier, legal pathways for citizens to vote. That has always been the Democratic Party line.
Yeah.
Brian, I just wanted to spend one more minute on Defend the Vote as an organization. Where can people find out more about this? What are your social handles? How can they get involved actively in opposing the SAVE Act?
Yeah, www.wedefendthevote.org. I mean, we are a voting rights organization, and we care that all Americans' votes can be heard. We want all Americans' voices to be heard, right? Republican, Democratic, whatever it may be, let the process play out, right? But we know that with Republicans bringing SAVE Act for a vote, it's going to block tens of millions, and we got to stop that. So that is us, Defend the Vote, pro-voter rights organization, trying to stop the SAVE Act.
Give us the website one more time, Brian. And folks, if you miss it, if you don't have your pen and paper ready, don't worry. We'll drop it in the show notes from today that you can find every day at civicmedia.us/shows. You can also find the show notes if you like to listen to your podcast on Spotify or Apple Pods. You can find us there as well. Give us that website one more time, Brian.
Absolutely. It's the action that we all want you to follow. WeDefendTheVote.org. That's who we are. Defend the vote.
And at the end of the day, here is the bottom line. If I can have really good faith moments, and I have had many of them with conservative friends, and I say, what is the good outcome that you see? Well, we want to make sure that citizens are voting. And I say, I agree with that. And so let's actually test the premises here. If we can agree that we want more voter participation by citizens, then let's test the impact of these bits of legislation. Let's think about how it's actually going to work instead of stopping at what initial might come behind an elected official's name. We all deserve that. Every American citizen and every voter does. Defend the Vote. Brian Lemick, Executive Director, thank you so much for your time this afternoon, sir. Keep up the important work. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by one of my very special guests from Emily's List, talking about the importance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court election and Elon Musk's muddling about to buy off yet another elected official. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.